ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. First, one must control his speaking power. Every one of us has the power of speech. As soon as we get an opportunity, we begin to speak. If we do not speak about Krishna consciousness, we speak about all sorts of nonsense. A toad in the field speaks by croaking. And similarly, everyone who has a tongue wants to speak, even if all he has to say is nonsense. The croaking of the toad, however, simply invites the snake, "Please come here and eat me." Nonetheless, although it is inviting death, the toad goes on croaking. The talking of materialistic men and impersonalist Mayavadi philosophers may be compared to the croaking of frogs. They are always speaking nonsense and thus inviting death to catch them. Controlling speech, however, does not mean self-imposed silence, the external process of mauna, as Mayavadi philosophers think. Silence may appear helpful for some time, but ultimately it proves a failure. The meaning of controlled speech conveyed by Srila Rupa Goswami advocates the positive process of Krishna Katha, engaging the speaking process in glorifying the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The tongue can thus glorify the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. The preacher of Krishna Katha is always beyond the clutches of death. This is the significance of controlling the urge to speak. So now he takes the first of them, that controlling the speech then is the most important. Because controlling the speech means then you're able to direct what you're thinking, how you're thinking, why you're thinking. Otherwise, then what happens is that we may, like the Mayavadis, they try to control speech by not talking at all, which is difficult, no doubt. That is, it's a difficult thing. It's not an easy thing to not speak. But actually, it is more easy than speaking something positive, speaking about Krishna. Because then that means not speaking, it is a vow, it's a determination. Yes, I can do it. But Krishna, speaking about Krishna means that there must be a taste for that. There must be an interest in that. Therefore, it is more difficult. So if one can do that, then this is how you will control the mind. Because by the speech, you control the mind. And if the mind is controlled, then we'll see then that controls the anger. So speech then becomes very, very important. So then, if we concentrate on this one thing, so we can improve everything else. We can see that also in the offenses against the holy name, the first offense is then blaspheming the devotees, so that's speech. If we control the speech, that first offense is not committed. If we control the speech, then we don't talk about all kinds of nonsense, so therefore then we can get rid of the last offense, which is to maintain material attachments. And so with these two out of the way, then we find the others will be much more easy to control, much more easy to establish. So this desire to speak all kinds of nonsense, then that is natural, because what is on your mind is what people want to speak. Right? Whatever is on the mind is what we want to speak. So if we can control this speech, then that means we are aware of what our mind is thinking. You know, this is a important thing. We must become conscious of what we're thinking. Because what is thought is what we speak. Example of this, nice example, is a story of Gopal Bhatt. You may have heard about Gopal Bhatt. He was the Prime Minister for the King of Krishnagar. His name was Krishna Devarai. There was also a Krishna Devarai in South India. Then he had a Prime Minister named Tenali Ram. many of the stories are interchanged. It's hard to say which ones come from which place. But they both were similar. They both started out as court jesters and that, and they both became the prime ministers because they were most intelligent. Because one has to be intelligent to make people laugh. So the jokester means he's very smart. You can't think of something new every time without having brains. So then these two, because they had their right brain, then they soon became the prime minister because they were so clever. So one day then the king, so many times the king and the minister, there's always, some joking is there. And the king generally tries to catch the prime minister. It's one of his fun that he tries to, see if he can bewilder him or catch him in some off way or some way. It's a challenge. It's a difficulty to be around a king. Then it is dangerous in one sense because there's always some challenge is there. Sometimes to one's prestige, sometimes a facility, sometimes even one's life. So in this case, it was a joke. So the king had three clay dolls, terracotta dolls, they brought and placed down. And then the king said, "You are very expert at seeing someone's mentality, understanding where thought and their position and everything. So you please tell us which of these three dolls is intelligent and which is not." So then the king, because he had made this, naturally, how are you going to say which one's there? And if he says, well, how can you say? Then he says you can't even tell some dolls. How are you going to tell people like this? It'll make sense. He'll become the jokes will be made about him. So then Gopal Bhatt said, no problem. Then he went and he found a coconut, these brooms. In India, they take the coconut fronds. And off each leaf, on the back of each leaf, is a very thin, hard bit. So in India, they take all those off of all the coconut leaves and they bind them together and make a broom out of it. So this broom is very good. It can be used inside, outside. You can use it with water. So many things you can do. It's very useful. So he went and broke off one of those pieces. He had this very long, thin piece. So he went up to the first doll and he put the coconut stick in the one ear of the doll and it came out the other ear. So then he took it out. And then he went to the next one and he put it in the ear and it came out the mouth. So he pulled it out again. Then he went to the third one and he stuck it in the ear and it didn't go anywhere. It got stuck. So then after this, then he announced to the king, so I have tested all these three dolls and this third doll is the most intelligent. Right? So now this was just a joke and now he's with confidence saying this doll is intelligent. So the king is, saying, how can you say this doll? No, this one is intelligent. You asked me to decide which is intelligent. It's kind of like you're making the joke. You're saying, well, I'm saying this one is intelligent. So the king said, okay, you're just saying this. Now you have to prove it. Now that you've said it, you have to prove it. He said, yes, no problem. See, this first doll is whatever goes in one ear comes out the other ear. Whatever you tell it comes right out. So therefore they're not intelligent at all because they don't grasp anything. Said the second doll is also not intelligent because whatever it hears it immediately goes and speaks to everybody. Like that. So this doll also is not intelligent. But this third doll, what it hears, sticks inside its head. It thinks about it. It doesn't speak it. So this one is the most intelligent. So then same is that what we are thinking. If we just speak all nonsense, means what we think is what we're going to speak. So if we're thinking about Krishna, then we'll speak about Krishna. And if we find we're not speaking about Krishna, then we have to stop that and then think, I'm not thinking about Krishna. Then we'll be able to, gradually, then control the speech. Because what we think about then is going to make all our values and that. And that's going to create, disturb all the other senses. Like that. Of all the senses, the most important is the speech. Of all the different, there's 10 senses. So of all of them, the speech is the most important here. Because by that, if you can control the speech, means you have heard properly. What you hear is what you'll speak. So if you actually heard and understood, then you'll speak. If we've heard and not understood, we won't speak. Or if we've heard nonsense, then we speak that, like that. So that's how you can tell intelligence. The senses and the intelligence are connected. So that's why the speech then becomes very, very important in this. Yeah, is there any questions on this? Or? Okay. So then Rupa Goswami goes on to explain about the mind. So this was speech, now the mind. The restlessness or fickleness of the mind, manovega, is controlled when one can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 22:31 says, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoy Andhakar Jaha Krishna Taha Nahi Mayar Adhikar. Krishna is just like the sun, and Maya is just like darkness. If the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. Similarly, if Krishna is present in the mind, there is no possibility of the mind being agitated by Maya's influence. The yogic process of negating all material thoughts will not help. To try to create a vacuum in the mind is artificial, and the vacuum will not remain. However, if one always thinks of Krishna and how to serve Krishna best, one's mind will naturally be controlled. So here we see also the yogis, then they try to make the mind, they control the mind by trying to empty it out. So even these great persons who are into these kind of things, then they can not make the mind empty for very long, like that. You can actually, in the yoga process, make the mind empty, only if you stop the breathing. Because as long as the breath moves, the mind is disturbed. And when the breath stops, it is peaceful. That's why they practice this breathing in, holding. Breathing out, holding. Like this, because then they do this long enough, and then after a while, they just take the inward breath and outward breath and put it into each other, so the breath stops. So once the breath has stopped, then the mind will be peaceful. When the mind's peaceful, then they can pull in the senses. When they've pulled in the senses, then they can focus it on one point. And when they focus it on one point, then they can start meditation on the Lord. So it's a very mechanical process. So mechanically it can only work if you stop the breathing. Otherwise, it won't work. And most we see the yogis, because Krishna comes later in the process. It's a mechanical process. You go through all these aspects. At the end you put Krishna into it. So many of them become bewildered, and before Krishna is put in, they've already become, sidetracked by the mystic cities. So most yogis we hear about, then they're into their yoga cities. Very few are actually trying to attain to realization of the Lord. So the yogic process of trying to create a vacuum, or also the Buddhists, they use this, but you can only do this for a certain amount of time. You cannot do it fully. So here again, the solution is to put Krishna there. So if we're always thinking of Krishna, then there's no Maya. Because wherever Krishna is, there'll be no Maya. So in the same ways, then depending upon our position, we may be thinking of Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes, or his instructions, like the instructions in Bhagavad Gita or in the Bhagavatam. How to apply those in our life, we will see within our life. What we're doing, is it connected to Krishna? You know, think about whatever we want to think about. But if we can connect that to Krishna, then even thinking about things that aren't so direct then become a basis of elevation. If our service or other aspects are connected to Krishna, then thinking about them also then connects us to Krishna. Or even the family and that, if how we deal with the family and our purpose in dealing with the family is connected to Krishna, then that will also then gradually bring us to Krishna. So all of this can be used, but we must be able to put Krishna in there. So in the speech, Krishna has to be connected in some way. In our thoughts, Krishna must be connected in some way. So we see these are the only ways to create you know, auspiciousness is by including Krishna in here. That, any questions on this one? Controlling the mind? Yes.
That's what I'm thinking on the lines of the speech.
Okay.
So if one is a practicing devotee and one is progressing reasonably well, but one's job puts one in a position that one has to talk about the material world. So a practicing devotee, if he at that point, or he or she at that point in time, talks in his business capacity regarding the material energy, but in his mind he's aware that that's Krishna's energy and he sees it in relationship to Krishna. So he can externally talk, but internally somehow connected to Krishna, that's...
Yeah, that's fine. Like that. It means you have to see the energies at work, or you have to see what is your purpose for working. Why are you working? You know, working is because you'll make money. And then what will you do with that money? What's the purpose of having that money? You know, so if that's also connected to Krishna, then that's there. You want to take care of the family or other things, but then why take care of the family? What is the purpose of that? You know, so is that connected to Krishna? You know, and if that's connected to Krishna, then how is that shown? It means we can say it's connected to Krishna. Yes, I'm making money, taking... How is that shown? How are we dealing? How are we training the children? How are we dealing with the husband or wife? How are we dealing with our possessions and our house? Is it somehow or another connected the way Krishna likes it? Do we see it as Krishna's? You know, so like this, one can judge by... means the speech is one thing. What someone says is one thing. What they do is another. So basically you speak what your values are. So if you speak and don't see the activity, that means they may understand it, but they don't value it. Otherwise, if you value it, you'll do it. So if they talk about it and do it, then that's good. But if they talk about it and don't do it, that's not as good, you know. But at least it's better than not talking about it at all. Like that. So in any way, if you can just see that the indirectness, or you can see the directness, you can watch the amazingness of the potency of speech on getting people to accept or acknowledge or buy things, you know, how sweet speech or all kinds of things can affect the living entity. They buy something that they absolutely don't need. It's amazing watching the Lord's potency. You know, like that. Because they want to, you know, they want to enjoy, so therefore that's how you are catching them. You know, you're not catching them by telling them, well, you know, it is pretty expensive to buy this land. I mean, you could use this for so many other things. You know, you could send your kid to school, or, you know, you could do some other things. But, you know, if you really think that it's, you know, if you really think it's nice living out in the countryside, but, you know, the planes fly overhead and, you know, the logging companies go by and, you know, the highway is pretty noisy. But, I mean, you can really think maybe you're out, you know, being natural and out there. But, I mean, if you're in that kind of illusion, great. Yeah, we got the land. Go ahead, buy it. You know, there's a sucker born every moment. But they may not buy. So, you know, truthfulness may not work. You know, but if you tell them, you know, oh, you know, so, you know, what you've always been looking for, that, you know, ideal, the perfect, you know, this, that, and you'll enjoy, and you're out there, and, you know, all these different things you can say, whatever you can dream up. However clever you are to inspire them to feel that they're the lord of all they survey and the, you know, enjoyer of everything, you know, then they'll buy. And they'll do, they'll get involved, or whatever it is. So that's the, you know, that's the trick. You know, you get some big donor involved. Why? Because he feels he's involved, you know. You make him, give him a position, do this and that, you're playing to his ego. And then they're feeling they want to put their money there because it's theirs, you know. So like this, so it's, you can watch it from that side also, just watching how amazing it is, the material energy, how even the so-called most sophisticated, most together people fall for the same thing, you know, like that. It's amazing, you know. What is it? Flattery gets you everywhere. Like that. Yeah. Yes.
So you're saying that thinking of service is beneficial as well. Is it of a lesser value than thinking of Krishna directly? Should one be thinking of service and then eventually aspire to be thinking directly of Krishna's pastimes at some later stage?
Means that one will come anyway. See, when we're in the practice of sadhana bhakti, basically it's the instructions that take us through. Prabhupada says we can tell one's advanced by one's knowledge and detachment. Though ultimately, once you get to liberation, you come to the liberated platform, you're not conditioned, these aren't so important. Because means you're detached from Maya, but you want to become attached to Krishna. And knowledge about Krishna isn't as important as relationship with Krishna, that interaction. So they're important to get one liberated. So then naturally the instructions, and so that instruction then if one is more on the platform of karma yoga, then one's going to tend to think more of the service. If one is on the platform of jnana yoga, one's going to think more of the energies and all that at work within the service. The service is the medium through which the energies are working. While in karma yoga, then the service itself is directly one's focus, like that. But when one comes then to the liberated platform, then generally one will be thinking more of the pastimes, like that. But in any case, even within this, when the energies, when one is on thinking on that platform, then generally we'll find is the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, then also may come up like that. We may think of the Lord's form or the qualities, and those qualities may also be involved in the understanding how the energies work, or the pastimes, you understand how from that pastimes you get the perversion into these. You know, you see the connections. Though it's still, the tendency will be a bit intellectual. That's the meaning of the jnana yoga. Is that okay? Yes.
You said that by not talking with so much nonsense, then one can control the tendency to maintain material attachments, so that by controlling speech you can avoid the defense. But isn't that also, is that sufficient? Because we've seen that you could control the speech, but still not have the mind controlled, and you could be maintaining material attachments without necessarily talking with nonsense. Is it really sufficient to control the speech?
It's the first step, because to actually control the speech means, here, controlling the speech means all the time. It doesn't mean just when you're at the temple or with devotees. It means wherever you are, whatever the situation, what you'll speak, how you'll speak, will be there. So then that can be seen, you know, if we take a 24-hour period, or, you know, or stretch that out over so many days or weeks or months, then we'll find, you know, more what is our value. You know, we may be Krishna conscious all the time, you know, speaking so many nice things, but when we're with certain people, then we'll speak all kinds of things. So one has to see that. So if in all situations, at all times, we're speaking, generally means that the mind, that's what it's satisfied with. But, you know, you possibly, you know, it means theoretically you could have a situation where you could have learned so that you speak these things and you parrot them, though you're maybe not contemplating them. But generally the mind has to contemplate something, and whatever is valuable to it is what you have to be endeavoring for in speech. So then you could check, okay, the person's always speaking, but how are they acting? So if the action doesn't match the speech, then you can tell maybe the mind's not involved. Because the action will be based upon what the mind desires. What the mind wants is what we'll do. So if we see that they're talking one thing, doing another, but they're always talking about Krishna, but always doing something else, that means then the mind is thinking about something else. You know, and then for some other reason they're always talking about Krishna. You know, but even if it's for some motive, it's better than not. You know, just that they've taken the endeavor to try to follow that instruction of Krishna and always think of Krishna, then that's a nice thing. Of course, now the next is to get the mind involved and the activities.
It just seems that the hierarchy would be that it's easier to control the speech than to control the mind, rather than the other way around.
That's the point. If you can control the speech, it means you have controlled the mind. means what's in the mind is what you're going to speak. But the point is how you speak is going to have effect on the mind. If you, just like you don't have to criticize devotees, but the mind, the tongue may start to go in that direction. And if you allow it to do that, that will affect the mind. Then the mind will start to think in that way. So speech, because the intelligence can control the mind. So speech is the symptom of intelligence. Means of the manifestations, means for us, the manifestations of the mode of passion are the 10 senses and the intelligence. So of that, how you can tell what's going on in here is by what's spoken. So you can understand what's happening on this platform by what's going on in the speech. That's why it picks these things: body, mind, words. Body is ignorance, mind is goodness, and words is passion. So you've covered the material existence, the conditioned nature. There's nothing else other. So if you say the body, mind, and words are engaged in Krishna's service, then that means it's fixed. You know, or Gandhari, she never thinks of another man, never talks about another man, and is never with another man. So therefore, she's the emblem of chastity. So you can tell by these three where someone is at. Like that. So what they'll do with their body, what they speak about, then you understand also what they're thinking about. You know. Is that okay?
Continuation
from another situation. What if, how did natures come into it? Say you can get one person that is more talkative than another, and one is naturally quiet. You have to just see what is the quality of their talking.
Yeah,
it's more important than what's said. Because person who doesn't talk, who knows what's going on in the mind? It could be very crazy, but they're able to keep themselves busy. You know, it means, let us say, you know, they themselves are satisfied. They don't have to talk to someone else. They're happy to be alone and talk to themselves. You know, while someone else needs to talk to others. What goes on in the mind has to come out of their mouth, and there has to be someone there listening. Otherwise, they're not satisfied. So it's more of what's going on, what's the quality of the speech. Because someone may be talking all day, but about Krishna, and that's nice. And someone else may be not talking all day, and we think, but if they're thinking about Krishna, great. And if they're not thinking about Krishna, it's not so good. Okay? So it's more the quality. Yeah, that's what we were mentioning this morning. It's not so much what the thing is, but what is the quality of it? What's the purity of it? You know, the quality of speech is good. It doesn't matter if there's more or less. Someone may speak a lot, someone may speak very little, but if it's about Krishna, then it's good. Like that, you know. Like that.
Manas, regarding controlling the mind or having a mind of Krishna 24 hours a day, so I drive a taxi. So being a taxi driver, you meet all kinds of people. So
Yes. Sometimes
in the blue moon, you meet a devotee, sometimes you meet a nice gentleman, sometimes you meet a businessman, sometimes you meet a drunkard, sometimes you meet a rascal.
Yeah. Run
away from your family. So if our mind were to think of all these different people, so of course with a devotee, you think of Krishna. They come, you know, they come to your car to talk about Krishna. So with a businessman, you talk about business, and with a drunkard, you talk about drunkard things, and with a rascal, you talk about getting money. So in that way, it's our mind always will be disturbed by all these different people coming to us. So if the concentrate on Krishna all the time, so should we see that whoever that comes to my car to take up this taxi, should we think that actually Krishna within their heart, Krishna is in their heart as well, so, and they send them to you, to teach you how to become Krishna conscious in one way or another. So if we see that actually Krishna sending them, and not be afraid of them, or be you know, and put it as a better opportunity to speak about Krishna if possible. And those who really have no chance to speak about Krishna, you try to just be a friend with them, and always in the mind think of this is Krishna's energy. If they run away or fail, it's something that you have supposed to lose anyway. So is that a way that we can put Krishna in the picture all the time, or is there another method?
Yeah, that means somehow or another, from, you know, whatever is a way that one can contemplate. Because otherwise, see, if you speak to a businessman about business, that's dharma. Because that's their nature, that's their dharma. So therefore, if you speak on that platform, then it's pleasing to them. But, you know, from that, then, I mean, you can, how you say, it's Krishna's energy, business is his energy, all these things are his energy. So then one can see how it works. Or if one has an understanding of it, then one can you know, direct them in a more proper direction, you know, like that. And, you know, what are proper elements of it, or what's the value of it, what they get out of it. You have to see what it is in your personality, what you know, and what you can interact with them. But in any way, then you can just, you know, it can be an understanding of how the material energy works, study of the material energy. And then from that you can just see that, you know, nobody's happy with it. There's nothing to be gained from it. There's nothing for you to gain from it. You know, so like that, one can you know, from that angle, you know, you may not be able to, you know, tell them about Krishna. But just, you know, being pleasant, it just goes with the job. That's why the material world is not the best situation, because according to one's occupational duties, then you know, it has different difficulties in interfacing with the material energy, you know, like that. So that's why it's considered that the of all, you know, how you say, the ideal is you know, that situation that is situated more in goodness, because then that tends towards knowledge, tends towards detachment. But if one's, you know, abilities or one's occupational duties aren't that, then one can appreciate that the other is better and this is not as good. But in any case, from it one can see, you know, Krishna's energy and why it's not good to get involved in these things. You know, what's the use of getting into all these different things, because these people are doing it and they're not happy. You know, and you can see, you know, a fairly good cross section every day.
So if you learn to practice our mind to think of Krishna in them, and if an opportunity arises to give them Krishna, would there be
you could. If it does, then you do. But if not, then, you know, don't disturb them, because your duty is you're driving the taxi. So it's, you know. And if you want to get another job, then that's another thing. But if you want to do this, but, you know, but you can contemplate in between also. When the people aren't in the car, then you can think about, you know.
The fear will always be there when you pick up a rascal who might sound like they want to rob you or whatever. So if we learn to practice to see that actually Krishna within your heart is within our heart, for the, you know, so the super soul. So somehow or other, if you know that Krishna, if you did it anyway, Krishna would not harm you if you are practicing Krishna consciousness. So even if it's harming you, so you know it's your karma, and it's still nothing to do with the soul. So would that be like a very positive way to look at things rather than...
That's one, but also Krishna gives intelligence, you know, so that you don't do something stupid.
And what is this another probably off track, this... Lord Krishna is obviously his Achinta Veda Veda, Tattva, that means he's in it and the root of the material nature. So would the soul be the same thing, or the soul is the spirit that is the individual living soul? Is it the same as Krishna's quality as Achinta Veda Veda Tattva?
Means Achinta Veda Veda Tattva means that there are so many seemingly contradicting energies, but they're all synthesized because of their connection to Krishna. So it's you take anything, you have the great variety, and you take it back to its source, back to its source, back to its source. Even though these two items are very different from each other, but they all come back to the same place. Like, let's say, sugar cane and a lemon tree, they're growing out of the same earth. One is sour, one is sweet. So you can reconcile that by the earth. You know? That all qualities are there in the earth. So then one draws sourness, one draws sweetness from it. You know, a flower draws smell. You know, so like that, you can, it means it goes back to Krishna, that everything comes from Krishna. Therefore, by his achintya potency, then so many incongruous things can be put together, like the living entity and dead matter. They don't match. You know, it's like if we put you in a room full of dead bodies, you would not be overly comfortable. You know, like that. But by the achintya potency, we're made comfortable. Right? The whole material world, everything's dead here. There's nothing alive here. Right? The soul is there, and that's what makes it then move and transform and all that. But the matter itself, even what's growing and living, is dead. It's dead matter. You know? So that's the amazing thing, is that the living entity is in dead matter and somehow another thinks it's great. So that's achintya. So the soul is also, you can say in that way, that Krishna's not in the material. The soul also is not. The soul is not touched by the material energy, but because they identify with it, because of the false ego, then they enjoy and suffer and think things are really happening. Things become very important, or things become substance here. It means the energy is here, but it has nothing to offer us. You know? You know, it's like if we went into a supermarket and there was nothing on the shelves. You know, it's there, the supermarket exists, but there's nothing for us. So therefore we say, this is not a supermarket. Right? So the same way as the material world is dead matter, so there's nothing here for us. Therefore we say it's illusory. But the energy itself exists, and it's in the form that we see it. But the value of that, you know, it's like so many cars go by and we don't even notice. You know, there are no value. Then some car goes by that strikes our attention. And then we think, oh, this is a value. But it's the same, made out of the same tin can and, you know, wheels as everything else. Just has been put together in a different way. You know, so, but it's still, it's dead matter. But we put the value on it. Right? We put the value on that car, but someone else doesn't like that kind of car. They like something else. Some old jalopy goes by and they go, wow, look at that one. You know? So, like this, that's the thing, is that we put the value of what's beautiful, of what's attractive, what's valuable, what's important. That's the illusion. The thing exists, the car exists, but that we call it valuable, that's the illusion. Or why we call it valuable, that's the illusion. If it's valuable that we can get us from here down to, you know, some program or for some service for Krishna, that's yes. You know, but if it's that, you know, driving in this car, it's very prestigious, this, that, that's illusion.
So what is the soul supposed to do then? What's the constitution of the soul?
The soul is supposed to understand that this is, that there's no value in anything except for Krishna. Like here we've seen the speech. If it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. The mind, if it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. So any possession we have, any action we do, any relationship we have, we can connect that to Krishna, that either directly or indirectly, but some way, then that's valuable. Like that. So the idea is with time, try to get more direct connections and less indirect. You know, though, especially in Grihastha Ashram, there'll be a lot more indirect, you know, and less direct, you know, depending on how you organize your life. But, you know, like chanting, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, hearing the Bhagavatam, these are direct. The things of understanding, I'm doing this job so I can get money, so I can maintain a Krishna-conscious household, that's indirect. Because the job itself is not directly Krishna conscious. It's just material. But because you're using the results for Krishna, therefore then it becomes spiritualized. Like that. But it in itself doesn't have a very necessarily important quality. Does that make some sense?
so what does so the grihastha has to do that ashram properly? In other words, you have to go out and work and get
Yeah, otherwise why join the ashram? Means the difficulty in this day and age is taking a responsibility. People want to be the controller and enjoyer, but they don't want to be responsible. You know, like you have a committee, right? A committee means I have control, but I'm not responsible. Because if someone complains about the decision of the committee, you can go to each committee member and say, they'll point to the other person. So therefore, there's no a committee means no responsibility. Unless it's a group of responsible persons, they get together, then they take responsibility for that decision. You can see that. It's obvious then. You know? But that is individuals taking part in the committee rather than individuals hiding behind a committee. You know? So like that you can see. But this is the problem nowadays, is everyone wants to say, like you have the temple council, you know, or something, and everybody wants to be on it because they want to tell the temple president exactly how they should do what they want him. In other words, he's a peon for them rather than he stands on his own. But they don't want to take responsibility, they don't want to give money, they don't want to do service, they just want to, you know, all the things they've been thinking, they want to tell him what to do. And then they go away and be happy that he's doing what they want him to do. So that's not very useful. You know, that's you know, like that. Or present day, you know, relationships between men and women. There's no responsibility. The woman has no responsibility to the kid. She'll generally kill it, or you know, make sure it doesn't happen in the first place. And the man, he's just, you know, he's interested in the sex. So he gets that, he goes away. There's no responsibility. Man and woman connect together, then there's a responsibility for children. So the man has to take care of the woman, woman takes care of the child. So then that's responsible. But nowadays, this is not, it's not popular. You know? Like that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, if you hear intelligence comes from Krishna, so we may say that this person is intelligent, this one's not so intelligent. But at least within Vedic culture, how do we identify an intelligent person? Like, if we want to become more intelligent, by what sort of qualities would we look at trying to develop or cultivate?
So there's all kinds of on the material platform is anything that someone can do that takes intelligence. And like Prabhupada gives the example, the man in the street who's fixing the shoes. That takes intelligence, that takes expertise. We couldn't do it. So he has a special intelligence to do that. So in that way there's all kinds of intelligence. Though, then you can grade them. Everybody has intelligence like that. You know? So, but of them, then you know, those who can excel in the arts is considered, you know, better than just general intelligence. You know, and then those who can excel in economic development is better than that. Someone who can excel in influence or strength is better than that. You know, political strength, not necessarily physical. You know, prowess and like that. But someone who can excel in knowledge is better than that. But better than that is Krishna consciousness. So of all of them, then the best is Krishna consciousness. So even if one is the man who is fixing the shoes in the street, if he is Krishna conscious, then he's the most intelligent person. You know, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is that if you have a crowd of people and devotees go by and one person says Hare Krishna, he's the best in the crowd. He's the most intelligent, he's the best person. Like that, because he has that intelligence. So others, he may be, you know, socially or otherwise, not necessarily the best man in that crowd.
So having a group of Krishna conscious people, could you say the most intelligent person is that one who's most expert in engaging material energy or other persons in Krishna service, or is there some criteria?
As long as he can engage himself, yes. Okay. If he can't engage himself, then no. Because then that engagement of others will be temporary. See, in the Vedic culture, everything starts, you can do it yourself, then the next step is do it for others. You know? So if you yourself, then you can get others. So then means it's not so much that you can engage, but you can inspire like that, because you may have those that engage by managerial arrangements, but those who engage by inspiring others to do it themselves. So of the two, one is active intelligence, the other is lazy intelligence. Of the two, better is the lazy. But the point is it doesn't matter as long as it happens, or by any combination. Like that. You may in some areas do it yourself, and that way inspire others to follow, and others you'll get them to do when you don't do. But in any case, however you can get, that's intelligence. You know, the parents get their kids, or you know, you get whatever, wherever is your sphere of influence, if you can somehow or another create Krishna consciousness within it, then that's good.
Can you describe the levels of mind control during the chanting of the japa from your experience?
Means it should be best as it's absorbed in, you know, the name, the form, the quality or pastimes of Krishna. So first is to hear. When you hear, then you hear the name. You know, then from that, then will come the form. From that will come qualities, pastimes. So it depends upon how much we're purified or how much we know Krishna. It's not a matter of force. It's just like you know some. Let's say you've heard someone's name, so you know the name, you recognize the name. But if you've seen that person, then when you hear the name, you think of that form. It's synonymous. By knowing them closely, then when you hear the name, you think of the qualities. And if you are an associate, or you know more about them, then you know their activities. So when you hear that name, you think of the activities of the person. So in the same way as become more Krishna conscious, then in our chanting, then we'll get one of these levels. Right? That is the that is what one should absorb oneself.
We have smaller steps, because you described them correctly. All of them are approachable for most of us.
Well, we think about the philosophy, we think about our activities.
What is better, just to try and get fully, mind fully on the sound of the harmony?
Yeah, well, the sound is the name. When we say name, form, qualities, pastimes, sound is name. So that's the ideal. But I'm saying if it doesn't, it goes to other things, then better than it's on activities or knowledge about Krishna.
Okay. Now, would it be proper to avoid any thoughts consciously?
If you can. Means, but you have to focus on something. Mind has to be busy. You can't clear it and make a vacuum. It means if you take out other things, you have to put in something else.
I'm speaking more about the I'm saying that I want to just listen to mantra.
Yeah, so that's name.
Most times we can see that it's accompanied by different thoughts. Thoughts could be mundane, or is spiritual. It's clear better to have some spiritual. But still, would it be better just to be able to listen only the sound without any thoughts? Higher level, or it's where is it?
Okay. We'll start all over again. We have name, form, qualities, and pastimes. So of it, the name is the first position. So we hear the name, we understand that this is non-different from Krishna. Then that is the first stage in, you know, very dynamic chanting. Then, because we study about Krishna, we hear about Krishna, as we develop our attraction to Krishna, attachment to Krishna, then the next stage will naturally, hearing that name, will remember the form. Right? Then from that, it will go from remembering the form into understanding the qualities. Because the form is, then there's different qualities that Krishna has in his relationship with his devotees. Then the last stage will be that of the absorption in the pastimes. So therefore, this is where serious chanting starts, is when you hear the name. Then lower than that, then you may be distracted into, you know, thinking about your service or thinking about some other philosophy about Krishna consciousness, but not so much concentrating on the name. That's lower than that. Yeah. And but that still is not bad. Thinking about just something mundane is then not so important. Is that okay?
Some devotees say for them most results, most change was happening when they were just concentrating on the sound.
Yeah.
The sound, in other words, so immediate, it was within a matter of days, hours, was a big change, such shift in consciousness. Uh-huh. Whereas if he would allow this philosophy to discuss something, the spiritual topics, it was
because it's, I mean, is this something I'm supposed to answer here, or? I mean, if it's just a discussion.
An observation.
Huh? It's an observation. Okay. Yeah. Because that's the point, is that that's where the serious chanting begins, is when you can just hear. And then if you can just hear and maintain that, then the other stages will naturally follow. You can't start at a higher platform. You can't say that, oh, I'm remembering the pastimes and not hear. It all starts from hearing.
What if a person after the chanting with good concentration, he falls in some emotional sort of mood towards Krishna? It's quite seems ecstatic. But upon falling in that mood, he loses concentration on the japa.
That's because he's enjoying what's happening. See, that's why the Purusha Bhav has to be given up. Is that we want to enjoy the results of Krishna consciousness. So that's the point. Is that that's not an important. In the beginning, we stress the point of you'll be happy. But as you advance, then you see that your own happiness is not really the important thing. You know, just like, you know, there's a young girl and she's, you know, disturbed, get married, not get married, children, not children, this, that. And the other women tell her, you'll be happy if you get married, have children. So then, with that inspiration, she takes it up. But once she's a mother, then she realizes that her own happiness isn't the real happiness. The real happiness is seeing the child's happy. It's a more mature stage, but at least it's something in between. So we look at Krishna consciousness as a way that we're going to become happy. But actually, when Krishna's happy, then actually we're going to be happy. So these things, if you try to be happy with them, then you'll find you'll lose the other things.
We should try to avoid, at any cost, loss of concentration.
It means we should always try to be... It's depends on whether the concentration is following in that natural line. If from name it goes to form, to qualities, pastimes, that's not a loss in hearing. Because you can't do the one without the other. Right? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, this is quite interesting. Well, I'm chanting japa, and I have my, where I can place my consciousness, what I'm aware of, in other words, is the sound of the mantra. But then there's my mind going, whatever it's doing. Most of the time, I just find it insurmountable to actually bring my concentration to the sound. Therefore, if I were to consciously try to think of Krishna's forms and qualities in pastime, is that false?
You can try it, but you may or may not have results. You can try. There's no problem. You know, main thing is that the mind, depending upon, see, it's it's either restless or peaceful depending upon what it's valuable to it. You know? So if Krishna consciousness and chanting and that is valuable, then it likes doing it. You know? But if it doesn't, then it will always have something else to do. Because we're following this process more because of intelligence, not because of mind. That's why it's called Buddhi Yoga. It's the yoga of intelligence. Because the mind already has its program. But the intelligence is by observation. Because the intelligence can distinguish between things, while mind can't. Mind, all it does is goes, you know, you have two things, I want this one and not that one. That's all. It doesn't distinguish which is better or worse, you know, by any standard. It's the mind's standard is what I want is my standard. So if this is closer to my standard, this is what I want. That's what we were discussing this morning. Who made the standard? You know, someone says, you know, the way this culture is behaving is not good, but that culture is, you know, who makes the standard? You know, it's closer to what is close to our mind, our heart. But the intelligence can distinguish. It can see that, you know, I've been told that I can become happy doing all these things. I'm doing all these things. I'm not becoming happy. And I'm looking around me. People are not happy. People are frustrated. Therefore, something's wrong here. So by intelligence, generally we see we take up Krishna consciousness. And we know I should do this. I may want or not want to do this. But I do it anyway because I know it's good for me. Like taking medicine. Who likes to take medicine? It doesn't taste good. Right? But we take it anyway. Or we like to eat, or the doctor has restricted our diet or restricted our activity. You know, like the little kid. Loves to go out and play in the snow when they have pneumonia. Yeah, they love it. They snow. It's not a problem for them. But the mother restricts them. They don't like it. Or if they're smart, they understand. Okay, I shouldn't. Yes, by the mind won't understand snow and me in the snow. You know, equals cold. That's an intellectual calculation. For the kid, snow and me means fun. So therefore, that's what they want. But by intelligence, you understand snow and me means sick. So therefore, then only by intelligence you can do. So it's you in control by the intelligence. So if you can get the mind to do this, that's good. But if not, then by intelligence, we just keep doing it. You know? Is that okay?
Yeah, I hear people speaking of getting a taste of chanting. You
know, yes, like that's.
And I'll be honest, I just find chanting Japanese boring.
Yeah.
I really don't have an attraction for it, and that's not something that I've been trying to chant for the last 4.5 years. And the first time I chanted, I just felt frustration.
Yeah. No, that's because of impurity. The mind finds other things more exciting, so that's impurity of the mind. Like that. So when the mind becomes purified enough, then it starts to find, then it goes neutral on the chanting. You know, it may not be boring, but it may not be exciting. You know, it's okay. But then if we keep going, then we start to get a taste. And once the taste is there, then from then on in, then the whole process becomes very dynamic. Up to the point of getting a taste, you know, it's a bit of a push. But once the taste is gained, then it goes very easy. But that's by practice. Anything you do is by practice. Anything you take up in the beginning, it's difficult, and it may not be nice, you know. So if you have the determination, you get through it. It means it doesn't matter who it is, when they take up some new thing, it's not necessarily wonderful. You know, they want to learn how to play violin or play piano. I mean, you know, sitting there and going, it's not exciting. You know, especially when you got an old lady standing there with a stick, you know, and so it's not exciting. But after a while, when you can get down and you can actually play something, then you get a taste, and then that takes you on. But the beginning may be very, very difficult. But if you have the determination, you can see, I want to be able to do this, you do it. And other people will sit there, and after one or two times, and they, you know, don't like the old lady, and, you know, find it boring, and they go away. You know, so that's the thing. That's why the intelligence is more important in the practice of sadhana than the mind. because the intelligence will keep us fixed there. But once the mind has gotten a taste, then the mind is more important than the intelligence. Because taste is higher than, rasa is higher than tattva. Tattva is to get one established in rasa. You know, so it's a stepping stone. So you just have to keep it up.
Just to relate that to kirtan, if we say we have a taste for kirtan, it could necessarily be we just like the music, not necessarily the chanting.
It could be. Could be some means. There's two forms of taste. One is that the externals of it are very nice, and one of it is just the name itself. So there are the beginning stage, the lower stage of taste is that when everything's perfect, you know, the tune is nice, the attitude that the person is singing is nice, the kartals are nice, the mridanga is nice, people are dancing in a way you can relate to, you know, and all that, then it's a great kirtan. And if something's off, then no taste. But as one advances more, then it doesn't matter what shape it's in. You know, even everything's out of key, out of tune, out of everything. You know, it's great because it's the holy name. You know, but that comes later.
How would you relate that to chanting the mantra to Western music as opposed to Vedic style music? How do we understand that?
Well, it depends on who you're chanting for. You're chanting for Krishna, he generally prefers the you know, more traditional music like that. But better to chant to other music than to not chant at all. You know, the main point is that you're chanting. That's the principle of it. If it's that you, okay, the chanting's all right, but you like it in this way, then that can be done. But it should be understood it's not as good as chanting what's pleasing for Krishna. See, it's pleasing to Krishna that you're chanting. So that's whichever way you do it, that has been attained. But if you want to know what is Krishna's taste in music, then the Vedic has come from him. You know, it's just kind of the remnants what's left of from his music. Like that. You know, and if you get a little bit more remnants, then maybe you get down to the Western. Okay. Yeah.
Unrelated. You said earlier, a few days ago, that everything came down to Sambandha Adhyaya Prayojana.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, you know, like the Kanta has all the cosmology in it. What category is that?
That's basically Sambandha. Cosmology is sambandha, so you understand how the universe works. You understand it's a delineation of the material energy. So within sambandha, you have to know what is material energy, what is the soul, and what is God. And then what is that relationship between them. So it's all part of establishing sambandha. Like that. Is that okay? Like that. That's why it's describing. But once you know those things, then those things become useful in Abhideya. You know, means in the process you can contemplate what living entities are, what on which planets, what are their consciousness, what are their levels, how does that apply to yourself? You know, like that. So it becomes part of one's contemplation. Otherwise, specifically, it's sambandha. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
How can, on the role of smarana, the mind control, how can we improve?
Smarana means, smarana is something that comes later. First you hear, then you chant, and what you always hear and chant about, then you'll remember. So that's the next stage. So when hearing is in place, then the next to come will be chanting. And when that's in place, then remembrance will come. Like that. So you focus on you focus on hearing, and then the other aspects of chanting will automatically come. It's the same principle. It's the next stage.
The intelligence Once I hear a text from Prabhupada is, when you talk about this, people who don't believe in God, he said that how can one don't believe in God? Because if the power to speak is come from God, if God want to take away your power to speak, he can take it away at any time.
Yeah.
So would it true to say that if our intelligence also come from Krishna, that whatever we do, and that's why whatever we are good at, we should always try to learn to offer it back to Krishna. Is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Means intelligence, all the energies come from Krishna. All the elements come from Krishna. You know, so that's one of the things to that we understand. It's just, is any of our ability, it's coming from Krishna. It's not us. It's that, you know, by our previous activities, then we've had an interest in a particular direction. And in that direction, then has means the mind then becomes attached to a certain, identity, a certain process for enjoyment. So that then collects the senses necessary for that enjoyment, and the body that will hold those senses. You know, and then you will have naturally the abilities for that kind of purpose. So all those things, they're all Krishna's energies. So then those all become put in. You know, so it's not us. It's Krishna's energy. That means we're just the soul. So the soul is not doing all these things. The soul thinks it's these things. Therefore, you know. Yeah, it becomes trapped.
Can you elaborate more on the Sambandha and then Abhideya and Purujana? What is Abhideya and what is Purujana?
Sambandha means relationship, means the elements that are involved in a relationship and the relationship between those elements. Mm. You know, and then Abhideya is the activities that you perform in that relationship, and Prayojana is the goal of those activities and the goal of that relationship. You know, like that. So you, yeah. So that's used. You can apply it to anything. Okay. Anything else? No. Yes. Yeah.
The functions of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing. So what is the nature of that thinking? If the mind's only just accepting and rejecting, what is the thinking of the mind as against, say, the discriminating and the intelligence?
See, discriminating the intelligence is, it's discriminating in a generally, you know, can do in an unattached way, though it may be flavored by the mind. What is the mind's preferences? So it will look at it through that angle. It will break them down. But it doesn't choose. It doesn't choose. Thinking means sambandha. We're at our attraction to something. We see something and we try to see if that will connect with us, ourself, in any way. Like that. So that means then thinking means we're thinking about that. Does it connect? So the intelligence means the intelligence and mind will be working together. Intelligence will bring out all the different aspects of it, and the mind will then see, is there anything it likes or doesn't like? And so if it catches something it likes, then the thinking process then goes to the next stage. We become attracted. Right? So that's attraction. Our desire is created at this point in thinking. Then if it decides on something, then it goes to the next stage, which is feeling. It means then there's a need. We want it. We want that relationship. And then once it's come to that we're fixed that yes, this is what I want. You know, this is what I need. So that's the thinking, feeling. Then willing means then I start to do the activity that will get it. So it's a matter of thinking on whether I should choose this or not, then deciding, yes, I chose that. Then it's a matter of then engaging the senses to get it. Like that. So actual engaging the senses is the intelligence. That actually is what... for someone that the senses aren't controlled, then the intelligence is controlled by the mind. like that. So it just does what the mind wants. If someone is in control of the senses, then they won't do things that aren't proper like that. So then the intelligence won't allow, because the intelligence actually controls the senses. But if the mind's in control, then the mind controls them, because it controls the intelligence. Does that make some sense?
Maharaj, we sometimes hear of incidents where people have been driving and they've fallen asleep at the wheel, and somehow they haven't crashed the car, and they've actually arrived at their destination like 10 minutes later, and you know, they've actually been dozing. So is it that eventually we will be dozing in consciousness, actually in the sense that we'll be thinking of Krishna, and then on automatic pilot we'll be doing our material activity? Is that eventually how we will be when we become Krishna conscious? Is that what it would be like? Because I tried today at work, I was sitting at my desk in front of the computer, and I was thinking of what you were saying about how we have to, our mind has to be fixed on the Lord. So I sat there and I thought, okay, I'll practice and see if I can, you know, just carry on with my work today and try and focus on the Lord. Is that, nowhere near that stage, but is that eventually what we will be, what it will be like? We just focus and then it's just automatic pilot that we're doing what we do in our lives?
Means there's both, because the person is, how you say, it's just like breathing. You don't think about breathing, you know, or like walking. You don't think about that. You don't think, you know, okay, now right foot, okay, left foot,
yeah.
Now right foot. You know, it's like we don't think, you know, and that's even gross. I mean, if we really want to get into it, then we get down to the muscle, the tendon,
yeah.
You know. So it happens. But for a little baby, when they start walking, it's a major thing, you know. So it's so with time, there is that element to it that it becomes, you know. So if we have that kind of work that's just repetitive, then yes, that could happen. But otherwise, there's the aspect of seeing that work in connection to Krishna, you know.
Because there was a question one time, it was exactly who was Arjuna, and he was shooting the arrow. Was he actually, at that time he shot the arrow, was he actually thinking of the Lord? Or was it that, okay, he said, he was doing this for Krishna, before he actually draws and concentrates on the target. He thinks of Krishna before, and then after, but not during the actual action.
No, it's Krishna. See, it's both are going on at once. Well, it has to be one or the other. It's Krishna's work, so he's always thinking that this is Krishna's work, but at the same time, he's always thinking how to do that work good for Krishna. You know? So that's the thing, is whatever work we're supposed to do, we do that properly. But we understand is that it's Krishna's work.
So it will never be such that our minds are on this platform and our body or the material platform we're doing.
If it's something, if it's repetitive, if it's something simple, you know, washing the dishes, washing clothes, packing the rug, you know, these kind of things, then that's naturally when you'll check. Generally, if you're doing these things, you're never thinking about what you're doing. You know, if it's new, yes, you know, but if you've done it, you know, many, many times, then you're not thinking about it. Like that, but if it requires, you know, some application of intelligence, then at that moment you'll think of that, but you understand it's Krishna's work.
So the mood is that we are the servants of the Lord and we're doing this for you in devotion and love.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's yeah, okay.
Yeah, like that. Does that make sense?
With consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Thinking of Krishna, is it always that it's coming from the head or is it coming from the heart? Because we talk about thinking a lot from the
head. Okay, so when you're talking to a friend, and you're expressing some, you know, deep emotion, where do you put your hand? Yeah. That's where it's happening, you know, but the brain may be used as the mechanics for doing it. See, because the soul, by nature, has a spiritual form and feels spiritual emotion and all that. But the material body, then you have to get all the same, you know, happinesses and distresses and emotions that you would in a spiritual body, but it's done mechanically. So therefore it's done through the medium of the life airs, and then that pushes on all the various aspects of the body, and then that creates all the different things that happen in the body. So the, you know, the chemicals in the body create the emotions, you know, and you know, the fire in the body creates, you know, all these different things. You know, so it's all worked out that way. So therefore, through the brain, but we see through the pastime in the Daksha Yagya that they removed Daksha's head and put a goat's head on, and, you know, he functioned quite well. Of course, I'm not sure what his wife thought of it, but, you know, I mean, maybe if she liked goatees, it was okay. But otherwise, then, yeah, actually, you don't hear much about if he had more children after that pastime. That would be something interesting to ask Burijan. You know, if in chronology, was that kind of the end of the line, or was that... Never thought of that one.
He burned up his body soon after that, didn't he?
I'm not sure. Oh, well, yeah, he went through something, he got cursed or something, and ended up having to come through someone else. Yeah. Oh, well, it's been definitely something to think about. Yeah.
Just in relationship to that last question about working, I think it's possible, even if you're at a computer or in a meeting, you can still be humming the Maha Mantra in between.
Yeah, that you can do. That definitely you can do. Chanting can always go on, because there's that pastime with Arjuna. I don't know who it was, maybe it was Uddhava or something, and Krishna brought Uddhava, and they went over to Arjuna's hair, and the hair was chanting like that. There was also, I was told of one devotee, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, he was a Babaji. Yeah, very favorable to Prabhupada in that. He was always chanting. And then one time he got sick and they took him to the hospital. The doctor, when he put the stethoscope on his heart, he heard chanting. He called all the other doctors, hey, check this out, you know. They were highly impressed. Like that. Also, I've heard of in both Russia and Indonesia. I think it was Indonesia. They sometimes catch devotees and they try to deprogram. They give them these chemicals that make them forget everything, you know. And then from there, then they'll start them up again, reprogram them as, you know, good, you know, whatever the local citizen is. But then they find is they clear the memory. They don't know who they are, but the chanting doesn't stop. They keep chanting, and so that bewilders them very much. So chanting can always go on. Anything else on that?
Just one last question. Regarding the mind, should the mind be always thinking that we are spirit soul and this material energy or material is only a temporary place for us, and our mind should always focus back on Krishna?
That's best, because those are the three things. Means everything is going to start with those three. You always have to think of those three things. Whatever activity you're doing is Krishna, yourself, and the material energy. So then within that, then that's the, and then from that, then you will do the activities. Because it'll always come down to that. Krishna is always there, you're always there. And depending upon which aspect of material energy you're working with, then you will see that in relationship to Krishna and yourself as servant of Krishna. Like that.
So the element of servant is always be there in your mind?
Yes, yeah, servant, because if servant is there, then everything will work. Because if servant's not there, then the conditioned soul's natural thing will be, I am Lord. That's why the position is always emphasized of servant. Because then if we're servant, then devotionally it will work and materially it will work. You know? Like that. Then things will work properly. But if we're not in that mood of servant, then no relationship can work properly. Like that. Is that okay?
But I think it would be much easier if we do not compartmentalize, this is my mind saying like this, I will not listen, and this is my heart saying like this, it is my head saying.
Yeah, yeah.
If someone is going in a certain way, all these processes are always going on. We don't have to sort of be very conscious that, oh, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. It's not really black and white. They're all very, very closely interrelated.
Yeah, no, they're interrelated.
Very interrelated. You know? It's not easy to say, hey, this is only my mind, you know, and this is not my mind, sort of thing. And this is my head only, not my heart.
No, no. Well, there's a difference between, I mean, his head is just the mechanics of it. You won't notice that. That's not something you notice.
You don't notice.
But the difference between the mind and intelligence, that you can see. And
still in functioning, Maharaj, you don't have to worry too much about it. It automatically keeps going all the time, yes, no, thinking.
Yeah, no, it does. But then sometimes it's necessary to separate them if the yes and no is not going properly. You have to... Yeah, well, so that's the whole idea, is that you can see this, so you can see that it's working properly. If one has a natural inclination and it just goes, then that's easier. But if you don't, then you have to be able to distinguish between them. You have to understand what's going on. And because in knowledge, see, when you're in knowledge of something, then one is more peaceful. Just like if you're sick and you don't know what you're sick with, you're in anxiety. As soon as you know what it is, even if it's something dangerous, but at least you know it's that, you know, then the mind is more peaceful. So knowing what the things are can make it more peaceful. If the mind is disturbed, then if you can tell the difference between the mind and the intelligence, you know, then one is a little more peaceful. Like that.
It might even become... I mean, we don't want to be very conscious of this and always contemplate where it is coming from.
It's one of the... It's depends. It's one of the stages. It's one of the process. If someone has such kind of mind intelligence, then it's a useful... Like somebody from karma yoga will go into nishkam karma yoga and not emphasize so much the jnana aspect. Like that. They'll just do everything in a detached way for Krishna. But for those who have, then they'll use it. It's a bona fide process. Like you had the Python sadhu, Hare Krishna. The Python sadhu, everything, he would just contemplate everything. He didn't do anything, he just laid on the side of the road. That was his service. So he just contemplated. So depending upon the person, it will be, you know, more active or more contemplative, or a combination of both. It's very much up to the individual. You know, we're just discussing these as tools to use. Those that it makes sense to, we'll use them, and those that it's not important for, they'll use emphasize other aspects of Krishna consciousness. Means nature is very broad, so the tools of Krishna consciousness are also very broad. You know, so then as it's come up in the questions, we've described them. Like that. Yes.
Well, just on this point, obviously, Bunky's more advanced than myself. I find that I know it's my mind every morning. I go get up, it's telling me stay in bed, etc. The intelligence gets me up. Mm-hmm. It's quite clear to me. Now, you might have that problem, but I do. I have to know this. I have to know that.
Yeah, well, this, what I was meaning is that if one's natural conditioned position is more pious, then generally sadhana and regulation and activities of goodness are more easy. Yeah. But if one is coming from a background of passion and ignorance, the tendency is you have to use the intelligence to control, to keep it out of that, to keep the mind in goodness. But even one is pious and in goodness, one still has to use the intelligence to get past the niceties of goodness, because otherwise there's also the weakness that you'll get conditioned to that goodness. It is nice and wonderful, like you see in India. So much of the, you know, pious Indians, the Hindus and that, their lifestyle is wonderful. It's everything that anybody could ask for, they have. They have plenty of wealth. They don't have to worry about it. They have nice family relationships. They have all the facilities they need. They have their they have everything. There's nothing that they don't have. But at the same time, they become complacent because it's so nice, then they don't see the importance of Krishna consciousness. So then there has to be a touch of the intelligence there to then get them from to the next platform, which is there. But, you know, like he says, if it runs smoothly, you don't have to always be discriminating. But if it doesn't, then it's many times good to discriminate, you know, especially when you run into the mind brings up something from passion and ignorance, then at that time it's necessary. But if it's working in goodness, it's not necessary, because then it's harmonious, because the mind should be in goodness. When it's in goodness, then its relationship with the intelligence and the senses is very proper. But if the mind gets influenced by passion or ignorance, then it'll have to be controlled by the mind. So then, the intelligence, at that time, then you need to discriminate. So it depends on the individual. Like that. So it's, you know, both points are very valid. You know, both points are very valid. Yes?
So Maharaj, and as we understand that the intelligence doesn't mean one chooses what is best for that individual. So like a student and the material platform, if one is a student, then one's intelligence would say, I should study instead of socializing all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So one uses one's intelligence in that position.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned, when one gets to the mode of goodness, and if one wants to get out of that mode of goodness and go on to the transcendental platform, one will still at that point in time, at the beginning stages at least, one would still have to discriminate with higher intelligence that one is actually a spirit soul, servant of Krishna,
yeah.
And get out of that lower intelligence into the higher intelligence. Would that be right?
Like that.
So
means
that would require conscious effort initially.
It means conscious effort means contemplation combined with proper activity. So that will give realization. So realization is a different kind of intelligence. It can see much more deep and all that. See, once the intelligence, the mind, all these are trained by sadhana and good practices, then one doesn't necessarily need to discriminate. It just works nicely. But in the process of trying to train it, one may have to distinguish. You know, but once it's trained, it's natural.
Because that's the natural state of the living entity.
Yeah, like that. Like that. Originally. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah. Can you say a bit more about the importance of indirect methods of mind control? Because it seems that sometimes it is changing for very long and trying to break through somewhere up here, but they are bookish or something.
I mean, the point is you have to practice the complete process. You chant, and then all the activities that go along with chanting. See, best is 24 hours a day chanting. But if you need to do other things other than that, then you have to follow the processes that go along with that. You need to eat or sleep, you know, or, you know, interact with others, especially in connection with the family. You know, or you can't chant 24 hours. You know, then whatever the rest of the time that you're using, then you have to engage according to the rules, according to those things. So if you just focus on those, then wherever you're supposed to be, you'll get, it'll happen. You know, it's a natural progression. You know, as long as you know where you are, and then you progress from there. You know. Is that okay? Okay. So we should probably end here. It's getting late. Shri Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jainita Gaura Premanandi.